This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm joining you tonight from our Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and to those of you tuning into our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. 60 former jockeys benefit from this nonprofit organization. If you're able to help, please visit the website www.pdjf.org. So our guest this evening is a rider I looked up to early on in my career, a familiar face at Tampa Bay Downs. He's actually won 4 leading rider titles there, and he knows all too well the ups and downs of the business. His journey has not been an easy one, but I can't wait to hear his story. He's riding better than ever at 52 years of age with 3,440 wins and over $40 million in lifetime earnings. Ronnie Allen Jr., welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So great to have you on, Ronnie, and especially, like I said to you before the show, I know you're busy. You have family in town for the holidays, and I got to say, yeah. I was down at Tampa. I started my own career down at Tampa, and it was weird spending Christmas at Tampa with all the palm trees and everything going on down there. How has your holiday season been, Ronnie?
It's good. It's been warm down here. It really doesn't seem like Christmas, but when you go to the shopping malls and, you know, out and about, you know, hear all the Christmas music.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you get in the spirit.
Oh, yeah.
And we got a lot of family and everything in town, and everybody's getting together, and it's a good time.
That's awesome, Ronnie. Did you have a regular Christmas tree, or did you have a palm tree with lights?
No, I had a regular Christmas tree.
Well, that's good. That's good. And Ronnie, how's the season going so far at Tampa?
Pretty good. I can't complain. You know, I'm doing good. I'm currently second leading rider, and you know, with 9 wins, and I got like 14 seconds. So hopefully, them seconds will come back and win next time, and I'll be back on top.
Absolutely. And Ronnie, it's funny. We actually had your agent on the show a couple weeks ago, Paula Bacon, and she was such a pleasure to talk with and to hear her great story. And how is it having an agent work for you who used to be a rider?
It's good, really, for me, because she knows, you know, what I'm thinking out there and what horses to ride and where to run them at and everything. And she's also a trainer, you know, and she knows the condition book really good. And you know, she knows what to do and, you know, how to get the mounts and get them in the right races so they have an opportunity to win.
And how long have you two worked together?
We're, let's see, 5 years, going on 5 years now.
And that's tough. It's very tough at Tampa, given the fact that there are so many riders down there. Of course, everyone wants to head south during the winter time, and that has to be so important to have a good agent working for you and on your side. And do you think also because of her previous career, she's extra careful as far as safety is concerned?
Yeah, yeah, she does watch out for me and stuff, and you know, try not to get on the like, you know, horses that are a little, you know, curious, you know, if they've been off a long time or, you know, that for certain trainers and people that she doesn't know very good. And, you know, she always tells people, like, for first-time starters and everything, that I would like to work them before I ride them, you know, and stuff like that. And horses that's been off a long time, I'd like to, you know, work them out in the morning, test them out, make sure they're okay before I, you know, go in a race with them. Because we had one a couple of days ago that was off a long time, and it was a friend of hers, and the friend, you know, told her the horse is okay and everything, but I didn't get a chance to work it or anything, and I rode it, and the horse ended up breaking down. So,
oh my gosh,
she's usually really careful about that, and me and her work good together. We talk a lot, and you know, discuss different horses and stuff, and you know, we're a good team right now.
That's great, Ronnie. That's great. And describe your typical morning. Do you usually go out in the mornings and head out to the barns and work horses? And describe your daily routine.
Oh, yeah. I usually get up around, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock and head to the track. And you know, down here, you got to be there because there's so many riders. And, you know, if you're not there to show your face and get on horses, then somebody else is going to, you know, take your spot. And, you know, it's pretty tough down here because a lot of trainers like jockeys that gallop horses so they can save money. And, you know, I really don't gallop too many anymore, but I do go out there and I work a lot. And, you know, in the mornings I get up from anywhere from 6 to 8 a day, usually, you know. And it's tough in Tampa, you know, just always 100 riders down here, and it's you know, it's a tough meet. A lot of good riders too. It's not like 100, you know, bad riders. There's a lot of good riders that are leading rider and other, you know, during the summer and other tracks and stuff that come down. So it's not easy.
It's definitely a hustle, Ronnie. It's definitely a hustle.
Yeah.
And with so many riders, and I'm sure you would agree with me, when I would ride, I would obviously handicap the race, but you also handicap the riders you're riding against. And how is it going down there at the start of a meet and you have so many different riders and some maybe you're not familiar with? Is that a challenge?
Yeah, that's true. It you know, there's a handful of riders that, you know, during a race you want to try to stay away from or, you know, watch them very carefully because there's some that are kind of loose and you gotta, you know, try to be one step ahead of them because you never know which way they're going to go. And you know, they're just trying hard, you know, they just some of them just try too hard and you know, they make mistakes, and you just gotta try to know what they're thinking before they do it and you know, stay a step ahead of them.
And Ronnie, when they make those mistakes, and especially the younger riders, do you try to give them advice or point out something maybe they did wrong in a race?
Oh, yeah. All us older riders, like me, Scott Spieth, Dean Butler, my brother Mike, and Centino and everybody, we, you know, we try to help the younger riders out. And, you know, especially on the turf course here, it's really tight turns. And, you know, a lot of riders, younger riders want to make their move going into the far turn, and you know, it's a mistake because it gets really tight and jams people up, and it's just very dangerous. So we try to help them out and you know make them realize how to ride the turf course and how to you know, be safe, you know, because we got to take care of each other out there. It's nobody else is going to do it for us. We got to, you know, try to make ourselves safe.
That's right, Ronnie. That's exactly right. And you mentioned your brother, Mike. And Mike Allen, of course, has also been riding down there at Tampa for a long time. And how is that riding with your brother?
No, that's really competitive. Last week, we we both was coming down the lane, and I was in front, and he came and got me on the wire, and then a couple races later, I came and got him on the wire. So we're really competitive, and, you know, we laugh and joke about it and stuff, but, you know, he wants to win as bad as I do, and it's, we're pretty tight, and we try hard against each other.
Did you guys start your careers right around the same time?
He's like 2-3 years behind me. I started in DRC, well, actually Hazel Park, and then went over to DRC, and he started like 3 years later. And then I went to Tampa and was leading rider down here a few times, and then I moved my tech to Minnesota instead of going back to Detroit. And Mike, he went out to Seattle, Washington for a while. He did very well out there, too. But now we're back together. We're riding the same circuit, Presque Isle and Tampa, and yeah, we're doing good together.
Back together again, riding competitively, Ronnie. And
yeah.
Where did you guys grow up?
Mostly like Michigan, Tampa. My dad's a trainer also, Ronnie Allen Sr., and that's how we kind of got started in the horse business, because, you know, been in our blood, you know, all our life. So, and my dad used to go from Detroit to Tampa every year, you know. So we just traveled with him, and so we'd have to go to school in Detroit and then come down in Tampa and, you know, transfer and back and forth. And that was our life growing up.
All right, you were born a gypsy, Ronnie. You got to learn that very early on. And was it just you and your brother, Mike?
Yeah. Yeah, early in the years. And then my dad got divorced and then remarried. And now we have a stepbrother and a stepsister.
Okay.
His second wife.
Are they involved in the horse racing industry at all, your stepsisters?
No, not really. My sister is... He's a hairdresser, and my stepbrother, he's a mechanic.
Okay.
So they really don't have much to do with the horses.
So they stayed away from it.
Yeah.
Maybe smart of them, right?
yeah, could probably
be.
Is.
could be. But growing up, you did the circuit, the Michigan Tampa circuit. And when did you first think that you wanted to become a jockey?
Well, I always wanted to. Me and Mike, we used to ride hay bales when we was little, and we always wanted to be a jockey, and we looked up to jockeys. And, you know, me and Mike, we was always daredevils and, you know, riding our bikes and crazy stuff. And we always wanted to. But when we was in high school, our mom made us finish high school before we even thought about, you know, doing anything like that. So... But we did gallop horses and everything, and my dad always thought I'd get too big, and, you know, I was kind of big, but then when I was in school, I was a wrestler, so I kept my weight down and learned how to reduce and everything. And, you know, when I first, after I worked a bunch of horses and everything and learned how to go out of the starting gate, I got to ride my first race, and I tacked like 122 my first race, and I had to cut weight to do that. And I sure everybody thought I'd maybe last a year and then have to give it up. But I managed to cut, you know, keep my weight down, and, you know, just started winning races. And I loved it so much, I just got dedicated and, you know, was able to manage my weight, and here I am.
here you are, Ronnie. You mentioned you wrestled in high school, and it's funny. We've had so many people on the show here who had a similar background, starting out with managing their weight and that athleticism involved in wrestling. And that's funny.
Yeah.
And why do you think wrestling helped you so much, helped you prepare so much for your riding career? Just mostly the fact that you had to cut weight and things like that?
All that and... dedication. You got to really be dedicated to wrestling, you know, when you're in school, because it's a tough sport, you know. It's a one-on-one sport, and, you know, you just, it you learn a lot, you know, from one aspect of, you know, losing weight and managing your weight, and because then scales don't lie. You gotta get on it, and you gotta be the exact weight, or else you're not allowed to wrestle. Same as riding. If you're, well, they can call you overweight and stuff, but a lot of trainers and owners don't like to hear that. You know, they think weight matters a lot, which personally I think 4 or 5 pounds isn't gonna, you know, cost a race one way or the other. You know, but
yeah,
you know, some people think it is, so you got to keep it down. Yeah, just learn how to do it the right way.
Yeah, I would say I agree with you there, Ronnie. Of course, when I was apprentice, I of course pushed the fact, oh, you get, you know, 10-5 pounds off. But in my opinion, you're right. We're talking about 1,000-pound animal here. You know,
right.
A couple pounds, they're really not going to notice the difference in my opinion. But as you mentioned, you know, it's rather embarrassing when you hear your name over the loudspeaker announcing that you're, you know, 3 pounds over or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You try to avoid
that.
Good,
but,
no.
You know, most people that complain about are people that's never sat on a horse before.
Right.
And, you know, don't know, you know, so.
The ones that don't.
That's how that goes.
Really, exactly. They don't really understand, and they don't really understand the struggle either that is involved with keeping your weight down and maintaining it is so difficult. And Ronnie, how tall are you?
I'm 5'5".
5'5", yeah. So you're one of the taller guys in the room, I'm sure. And I remember I'm 5'6", and I remember I was at Tampa, and I picked up a horse. I had the bug. And the only reason I picked up the horse was that my agent told the trainer I could tack 106. And that was the lightest I've ever tacked in my life. And let me tell you what, Ronnie, I don't know. I don't really remember the race. I was so just exhausted from sitting in the hot box. And, you know, I ran that morning trying to get my weight down. And it was tough. It was tough. I mean, 106, that's with the saddle and the boots and everything. And, you know,
everything,
just me, myself, I had to get down right around 100, 102. And that was not fun. That was not fun. So how do you maintain it, Ronnie?
Well, earlier in my career, I used to have to go to the hot box and, you know, lose 3 or 4 pounds every day. But, you know, I just learned how to eat better. And, you know, just it comes with experience, you know, just learning your body and what you can eat and what you can drink. And, you know, it's just right now I don't have to hit the box at all now, because I don't know if it's because I'm older and my body's just adjusted, and I've been like the same weight for the last, you know, 7-8 years, and have no problem with it right now. But, you know, earlier in my career I did have to fight it a little bit and just hit the box and did a lot of running just like you did. And, you know, it's hard, but once you learn how to manage it, and it gets easier.
Yeah, I gotta say, Ronnie, I still go to the gym, and of course they have the saunas and everything at the gym, and I avoid those like the plague. I still won't even go near them. I said, no way. I've had my fill of those. And what would you say your typical daily diet consists of?
Well, in the morning, I wake up and have a cup of coffee, and that's it until maybe around lunchtime. When I get done in the morning, I have a little snack or something, but I don't eat nothing all day until after the races. Have a decent dinner. That's about it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to go all day waiting for dinner, you know.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
I drink the energy drinks that have a lot of vitamins. I take vitamins every day, and, you know, it just keeps you going. Once your body is used to that routine, then you don't have no starvation attacks or anything like that. You're not craving or starving. You know, once your body adjusts and everything, you're fine.
It's definitely a tough thing, because you have to be light, but you also, of course, have to be incredibly, incredibly strong, and to keep up that strength, it's It's not an easy thing with keeping down your weight and the rigorous schedule you must keep, waking up early and riding all day long. And it's a tough life, Ronnie. It's definitely.
It is. It's tough, but we love it.
And that's why you do it. You love it.
When you get in that winner's circle, it's all worthwhile.
Absolutely. There's no greater feeling in the world, I don't think, than a winner race. That's the best. Yeah. That's the best feeling.
Even if
world.
It's just a cheap $5,000 race, it's, you know.
Oh yeah.
Great.
Doesn't matter. You won. That's what counts. And jockey Ronnie Allen Jr. joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Ronnie, we talked about you maintaining your weight, and you started to ride, and you first rode at 122, but you got that down. And where did you ride your first race?
My first race was Hazel Park.
Hazel
Park. We raced over there for a couple months, and then we went over to DRC, and that's where I broke my maiden, was DRC. Matter of fact, my first one I win, I got disqualified.
No.
And I was riding for my dad, and you know, I just hit my horse and left-handed, and he came out in front of another rider, and they took me down. But the very next day, I win another one, so.
Oh, good.
I was all upset and crying, because I rode, like, maybe 50 horses before I ever broke my maiden.
Wow. Yeah.
They told me that's the best way to do it. You don't want to win right out the bat, because then you think you know everything. So you got to ride a bunch of bad ones first and learn how to do it. And then from then on, I started doing really good. And I was leading Bug Boy in both tracks, and then came down to Tampa and was leading Bug Boy down here. And
When you won that first race, technically speaking, when they took you down, that had to be a long car ride home with your dad, huh?
he was as upset as I was, I think.
Oh gosh, did he give you a hard time, or was he pretty understanding?
Nah, he didn't give me a hard time. He just, you know, told me it's got to be more careful. You got to keep control of that horse. You know, I was so excited because I was going to the lead and, you know, just hitting the horse too many times, and the horse was ducking out and had my head down and riding instead of paying attention, you know.
So, yeah.
That's what Bug Boys do.
That is very, very true, Ronnie. Very, very true. And when you started out riding there at Hazel Park in Detroit, were there any older riders in the room that kind of took you under their wing and showed you the ropes?
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of people that, riders that, you know, my dad used to ride, you know, before I started. And I looked up to them, like Danny Skolka and Therese Powers. You remember Therese Powers?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she used to ride for my dad, and Joe Judice. And, you know, there's a bunch of good riders there that, you know, took me under the wing, and, you know, trying to give me pointers and stuff like that. And, yeah, I learned a lot from them.
What was the best piece of advice you received early on?
The best piece of advice?
Mm-hmm.
I think it said, keep your head up and watch where you're going.
Good advice.
Yep.
And you mentioned that you rode at Hazel Park in Detroit, and I'm not even familiar. Where is Hazel Park?
It's kind of like the outskirts of Detroit.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little city called Hazel Park, and they got a little bull ring there, and that's where I started off. And tell you what, you learn a lot on a bull ring.
Oh, my goodness. Definitely. I rode at Charlestown. It's a little different experience at those bull rings. And that had to teach you early on the importance of breaking a horse out of the gate.
Yeah, I was very good getting them out of the gate and trying to get position in that first turn, because, you know, if you don't get them out of the gate and get, like, you're not 1, 2, 3 going in that first turn, you're either going wide or you're going to be coming from way back.
Yeah, it's a little bit trickier at those at those bull rings. It's definitely important to get out and get position. Even more important than your regular racetracks. And Hazel Park, is that? I'm sure that's closed down by now.
No, actually, they opened back up like 3 years ago, and they still have a short summer meet, like 30-day meet or something. They just race on weekends.
Okay, sure.
But they was closed down and just had the trotters there for a long time. And now they got thoroughbreds back there.
And how about Detroit? They have shut down, correct?
Yeah, that place, that's been leveled for a while. It's a shopping center now, so.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, we miss that track. It was a nice big track, had good barns and a good track surface, and, it did really well for a lot of years, and then just the economy got bad, and then we couldn't get, the gambling slots and stuff like that.
I know. It went away. I've talked to some people before who used to be involved there, and it was a lot of people liked the place. It's such a shame that that track. I know we had Bobby Ussery on the show last week, and he was talking about where was it? It was out in Massachusetts. A couple of the old racetracks out there, and Rockingham. How those places are no longer in existence either, and it's a shame.
It's a shame because people that go to them tracks every year, they're like family, and it's just kind of like breaking up a family. It's hard.
It really is, and of course the smaller tracks are the ones that tend to go first, and but so much history, so much history at those tracks in Massachusetts and then Detroit as well. And why do you think it is, what could help that maybe in the future to keep these smaller racetracks alive?
I don't know. There's such, nowadays there's such a horse shortage, and there's so many tracks, and the money, the economy, the state, don't want to help them out, and I don't know how to fix it. I wish I had the answers for that. But, just like Tampa Bay, it's going to be here forever, I think, because there's so many people down here in the wintertime.
Right.
And like older people that just like coming out and, betting on the horses, seeing the horses, and they bring their families, and, it's a family atmosphere track, and they don't need slot machines here. It's, their purses aren't real good, but, they're enough to survive, but it's just, it's a lot of people that come to the races here. They handle more money here than, most of the tracks around the country in the wintertime.
And it's a wonderful place. I love Tampa. I really do. And you mentioned the older people coming out to the racetrack. What about the younger crowd? Do you see a lot of younger people out there at Tampa?
Oh yeah. Yeah, they like during spring break and stuff like that, there's all kinds of young people down here, and they come to the races and have a good time.
Well, that's awesome, because of course we got to get more younger people involved in the sport as well to keep it going.
Yeah.
That's obviously very important and very good that Tampa, attracts the younger crowd down there. And
you go to Keeneland or something, Saratoga or something, and college towns and stuff like that, and you see a lot of young people and getting involved and having fun and going to the races.
Oh yeah. I'm here in Lexington, and they get all excited about Keeneland. As do I. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Maybe be out there tailgating and stuff.
Exactly. That's the thing. I don't know how many of the races they actually catch, but they're out there having a good time anyway. Again, jockey Ronnie Allen Jr. joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Ronnie, we talked about you rode up at Hazel Park in Detroit, and then you went down to Tampa, and you said you were a leading bug rider at Tampa as well.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
And how
a lot of Detroit people came down to Tampa back in the day, and you know, so I had a lot of business and everything already going into Tampa, and it just it kind of followed me down here, and I just kept on going as I was.
Well, Ronnie, I can't wait to hear more about Tampa. Time kind of got away from me. We'll continue our visit with jockey Ronnie Allen Jr. after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm Christina McManigal, and I'm joined tonight by jockey Ronnie Allen Jr. And Ronnie, right before we went to the break, we were talking about your early career, and you headed down to Tampa. You were leading Bug Boy at Tampa Bay Downs, and you're still riding strong there, of course. And how was your Bug year? How did that first year go for you?
It went really well. It started off slow, you know. Like I said, I rode a whole bunch of horses, but a bunch of bad horses when I first started, but I learned a lot. And then once I started winning, then, you know, it kind of opened people's eyes and said that, you know, seeing that I had a little talent. So, you know, a lot of people started wanting to ride me, and I just started doing good up in Detroit, and then it carried over to Tampa, and I've been doing good down here ever since.
That's awesome, Ronnie. And your dad, of course, was very involved in your career, given the fact that he was a trainer. And what did he think of you actually pursuing this career and the dangers involved?
Oh, yeah, him and my mom were very, very concerned because, you know, they knew how dangerous it was, and they've seen, you know, accidents and, you know, things that happen, but they knew I had a good head on my shoulders, and, you know, I know horses very well. You know, I started off being a hot walker and a groom and worked my way up through the ranks, you know, until I became a rider, and they knew I knew what I was doing out there. So, you know, they still nervous about me riding, but you know, they stood behind me. But my mom, she, before she passed away, she still used to close her eyes when the gates opened because she was scared.
Oh, my goodness.
Then during the race, she'd open them back up and watch. She is really, really scared about the gates.
Yeah. Well, it's a very dangerous part of the race, and Ronnie, how many injuries have you had during your career?
A lot.
A lot.
Quite a few. My first bad experience was actually in the gate, and a horse flipped on me and broke my leg, and you know that really hurt. That was bad, but 'cause I could see, you know, when I was going down back behind the gate, my leg got caught in the tailgate, and seeing the horse coming right down on my leg, and it was like slow motion, and I couldn't get out of there in time, and you know that was a bad one. But I'm not sure how many serious injuries, you know, I've had broken legs a couple times, and you know, broke my arm a couple times, but my most serious one was here at Tampa probably 4 years ago, and my horse clipped heels and went down on the turf and kind of got trampled and broke some ribs and had a concussion. But knock on wood, it's not as bad as some of them.
Knock on wood, exactly. And how do you, I actually read an article about that injury you just mentioned. You also lacerated your liver as well, and goodness. All kinds of...
What's that again?
You lacerated your liver, I think I read in the article as well, didn't you?
Yeah, that was the same accident when I broke my ribs.
Gosh.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the possibility of injuries when you're going into the gate? How do you focus just on riding?
Well, I really try not to think about it, because if you think about getting hurt, you know, too much, then you ain't going to be worth anything out there. You're going to be riding scared, and, you know, you're going to be, you know, so worried about getting hurt than riding your horse. And you're going to probably cause another accident if you're scared and you're going to do something that you normally wouldn't do, you know?
Exactly.
So...
focus.
And
focus.
A lot of trainers don't want to ride a jockey that's scared.
No, that doesn't really mix well. A jockey and being scared, you can't really do that. That doesn't work out very well.
No,
definitely not. But you know, wishing you all the safety out there, Ronnie. Of course, we don't want to talk about this too much. So moving on. So you killed him at Tampa your first year, and you had a little problem. Well, you killed him in the 80s, but after riding for several years, you took a little break.
Yeah, well, I was doing so good, and you know, just kind of got in with the wrong kind of people and was drinking a lot and, you know, just doing a little bit too much partying and, you know, got in some trouble, had a couple of bad breathalyzer tests and, you know, stuff like that. And then, you know, people started noticing, and, you know, I started noticing I wasn't riding as good, and I just didn't want to do it anymore and didn't care. You know, I was just so, I don't know, messed up in the head, just worried about drinking all the time. I'm an alcoholic, and you know, I just had to take a break. So I got away from the racetrack for 4 or 5 years, and you know, just tried to do other things, and went to the farm and learned a lot on the farm, and you know, just try to freshen up. But then, you know, after a few years, and I quit drinking and, you know, got my head straight, I started working horses again and, you know, getting fit again, and said, man, I'm not too old yet. I can maybe get back to the track. So I was able to get reinstated. And, you know, once I got reinstated, I started back here in Tampa. With 2008, and you know, started right where I left off. I started winning my very first one back. I win, and
wow.
Then from then on, and till there, till here. I don't know. I can't complain.
That's
God. God had a purpose for me, and He had a purpose for me to take that break, I guess. And
And now you're back doing what you meant to do.
I do have a lot of support and a lot of people behind me, and I don't know, it's a blessing.
Do you think it's, of course, we just heard about the horrible news that Garrett Gomez passed away. And he, of course, had his own demons. And do you think because of all of the stress involved with riding and the dangers and the politics and sometimes, you know, the bad situations, you know, getting taken off of horses and things like that and the stress of it all, do you think that is part of the reason why several riders struggle with addictions, with alcoholism and drugs?
Oh, definitely. It's got a big part of it, you know, because, you know, this game, horse racing game, is like a roller coaster. You know, you could be on top of the world, you know, one year, and next year can't buy them out, you know. And you're the same person, you can ride just the same, and you're just not getting the mounts, and you're not having success. And if you're not having success, then people don't want to ride you, and it takes a toll on your head, you know. And some people turn to drinking, some people turn to drugs, and, you know, it just, then if it gets out of control, then, I don't know, you just hit rock bottom. And, you know, it's tough on, there's been a lot of riders, really good riders, Chris Antley and Garrett Gomez, and a lot of good riders that I've seen. And I was on that path too. Myself, I was in a bad place, and luckily I took a break and got away from it, and, you know, I got sober, and now I'm back.
Now you're back, Ronnie, and you mentioned something that I found intriguing. You said you went to the farms, you took that little break, and you were working horses on the farms, and that you learned a lot. And you would think that obviously you rode races for years and you just killed them, and then you go to a farm and you think that's, well, that's easier work, and you know, oh, that, yeah, you know, you already know everything. But how was it going to the farm? You said you learned a lot. What did you learn there?
Yeah, well, in this game, you never know too much. You can always learn something in this game, because I never really worked around babies, like 2-year-olds and breaking babies and stuff like that before I started riding. You know, when I started as a hot walker and groom, I was always with older horses and stuff like that. But when I went to the farm, I was working with 2-year-olds and breaking them, and, you know, it's a different part of the game, and it's a very important part, you know. And I learned a lot about 2-year-olds and how to, you know, handle them, and, you know, I learned a lot. That's all I can say. I don't know. Just another part of the business that, you know, a lot of people should go through before they, you know, start riding and stuff.
Babies can teach you a lot. That's definitely true. That's definitely true. And I always liked riding the 2-year. You feel like you have a blank slate on your hands, and while they're green and don't know a lot, you can teach them, you know, the proper way to run. And would you say that obviously had to help you a lot later on going back to riding races? And would you say that helped you with riding the babies even today?
Yes, I think it did, you know, because, you know, I learned how to be calm with them. And, you know, because if you're nervous on a horse, then the horse is going to be nervous, especially on babies. So, you know, you just it teaches you how to be more patient, you know, because, you know, babies don't know what they're doing. And if you're nervous and scared on top of them, then they're going to get worse. So I learned how to, you know, be more patient with babies and, you know, talk to them, and, you know, it seems like they respond like better.
Most definitely.
You know, when you act like that, instead of trying to beat them up or make them do something, you try to be patient and teach them, you know.
And you think about it again, they're such big animals, you try to manhandle them, it doesn't usually work out very well, because at the end of the day, they're always going to be stronger than us.
That's for sure.
So it's always better to coax them into it, to try to work with them, as you mentioned.
Yeah. And dealing with kindness.
Exactly. And I find it, as like you said, they pick up on so much. It's so amazing how, even if it's just, it might not be nervousness so much if you're on the back of a horse, but even I would notice if I maybe had a bad day and I don't know, got in a fight with my boyfriend or something, and then I would go ride, and they pick up on that.
Yeah, they do. They're very smart animals.
It's amazing.
You know, they responded just like people, you know, they just respond to different things that you say or do or whatever, you know, just they're smart.
So, Ronnie, you learned a lot at the farms, and then you decided to come back, and why did you just missed it so much? You wanted to get back in the saddle?
Yeah, well, like I said, I was working horses, you know, the babies and everything, and it just felt like I wanted to do it again. You know, once I got sober and got my head clear, and, you know, I was able to get reinstated, and then I started coming. I came to the track down here in Tampa, and was working for my dad, just galloping. And, you know, because I was still pretty heavy. I got up to like 145 pounds when I was at the farm.
Really?
And so then I came down here and got reinstated and was able to gallop for my dad, and I was getting my weight down, and, you know, all the old trainers and people that knew me from before was asking me, when you gonna start riding again? They was all, you know, wanting me to get back in the saddle and everything. So I started getting my weight down, and slowly, I didn't do it like overnight. It took me a couple months, but, you know, once I got my weight down, I rode, my dad put me on my first horse, and it went, and, you know, then that was the year I started riding for Jamie Ness and, you know, a bunch of people that knew me from before. You know, Jamie knew me from back when I used to ride in Canterbury back in the 80s, and he gave me a shot on some, and we had a lot of success, and it just took off. It was amazing how fast, because like a couple weeks I was, you know, riding one or two and, you know, a couple here and there. And I was telling my valet, who is also my uncle, he's in the horse business too. I say, man, this is great, you know, making a little bit of money, and I just wish I could ride more. And then all of a sudden, like within a month, I was just riding the card and just winning races left and right, and I couldn't believe it. It was like a dream, you know.
Wow, that's
something else.
Oh my goodness, best story in the world, and that had to be so incredible to win that first race back for your dad, huh?
Yeah, it sure was.
Was that a horse you'd been galloping in the mornings?
Yeah, I was working and galloping the horse, and you know the horses. You know, I had some back class, and he's an older horse. He's like a 5 or 6 year old, and you know, he had a little speed, and you know, I remember the week before I got to ride the horse, I had to work him, and my dad was mad at me because I worked him too fast. He said, "Man, you worked this horse too fast." And I said, "Dad, trust me, he did it so easy, you know." So I knew I was on a live horse that day, and you know, we came out of the gate in front and just stayed there. It was great.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And that was, I did my research. That was on Valentine's Day 2008. Couple months later, you won 4 victories in a day.
Yeah. That year I had a couple four baggers, and I don't know. I couldn't believe it. It was amazing.
Now,
somebody, an older rider like me, taking 5 years off and then coming back and having that much success, it's just, know, unbelievable.
It's amazing, Ronnie. It's amazing, and just the opportunities you've earned. You know, it's such hard work you put in, and when you rolled that first race back, were you worried at all that you get tired, or maybe it wasn't going to be the same like before?
Nah. Well, I was, galloping anywhere from 10 to 15 a day and working some and everything, but there's nothing like a race. I knew I'd get a little tired, but when I was coming down the lane, I usually can stay down and, keep my butt down and everything, but when I was coming down the lane that day, I looked back, I seen I had a race win. I was thanking God because my legs were rubber. And when I got off that horse, I almost fell down on my butt.
Like you said, there's nothing like riding a race. You can gallop forever.
No, you can gallop as many as you want, but there's nothing like riding a race going 6 furlongs.
Joggy Ronnie Allen Jr. is joining me on Jock Talk tonight, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ronnie, in 2013, you won your 3,000th race at Presque Isle Downs. That had to be an incredible feeling, all that you've been through to accomplish that huge number.
Yeah, it was. It was a great day because I actually win the race. My girlfriend, she's a trainer, and I actually win for her.
Really?
I was sitting on 3,000 for like 2 weeks and couldn't win a race.
No.
And, I was having a lot of seconds and close ones. And then I just, one day that filly just ran her eyeballs out and I win for Maria Bowersox, my girlfriend.
That's fantastic. What a got the monkey off your back. That's always so frustrating when you have.
Yeah, I know. It seems like it always happens that way for riders. Uh-huh. When they're reaching a milestone. They just get to that last one or two and just can't get there. And I don't know what it is.
But you got it done, Ronnie. You got it done. And how is it riding? I wanted to ask you, how is it riding at Presque Isle with that synthetic surface?
I like it. As long as the horse likes it, that's a big thing if a horse likes it or not, because some horses don't handle it because it's real sticky, that tapeta surface. Mm-hmm. And when they hit the ground, they don't slide. It don't have no give like a dirt track does, And, the horse likes it, they get over it. Like, it feels like you're floating on air, but if they don't like it, they're just kind of sticking in the ground and, they don't feel comfortable, and makes you not feel comfortable either on top of them. But
sure.
I like the surface because when you're back behind and there's no dirt flying and not getting hit in the face with a bunch of mud and stuff, and it's a pretty nice surface.
Do you have to ride differently?
Yeah, you kind of got to. Depends on like the weather too. If it's real hot or it's real cold, the surface kind of changes from speed to come from behind or whatever. But you kind of got to ride it sort of like a turf course. A lot of horses come from behind there. But if the track's real cool, if it's a cool day or something, the speed will hold a little better.
Really?
So. You got to know your track, just like down here at Tampa. I know this track like the back of my hand, and you got to know where to be. And sometimes, like they say, if the tide's in or the tide's out, changes the surface. And I believe that 100% because it does.
Well, I don't want you to give away all your secrets, Ronnie, but would you say Tampa's a speed favoring track, or what's the typical, or it just depends on the tide?
Yeah, it depends on, like, early in the day, it seems like it carries the speed a little better, when they have lots of water on it, because early in the day they have the water trucks out there before the races, and it gets the track pretty firm and stuff, but then as the day goes on, it starts drying out, and gets a little more deep and cuppy, so You know, I think early in the day you want to bet on speed horses.
Good to know, Ronnie. Good to know. I'm going to take that tip, hopefully cash a few tickets with that information.
Yeah.
But would you say, now, we talked a little bit about this earlier, but before you ride, while you're sitting there in the room and you're getting ready to ride, do you watch replays? Do you really thoroughly handicap the races, or do you just kind of focus on getting to know your horse? What's your routine?
Well, I look at the program, and you know, there's some trainers that are going to call me and give me instructions and stuff, but I listen to what they have to say if a horse has a quirk about them or something like that. But you know, when them gates open, you know, all the instructions and everything you've planned in your head goes out the window most of the time, you know.
That's right.
'Cause you can look at the paper and watch a replay of a horse and everything, but until them gates open, you really don't know what you're going to do until you get there, you know.
That's exactly right. That's exactly where you got to have plan A, B, C, D, and then it's probably going to be something else.
That's it.
You just don't know until the gates open. That's exactly right.
Yeah. I believe that 100%. And most older riders will say the same thing. You know, it's just never know what's going to happen until the gates open. You can get bumped. You could stumble. It could, you know, whatever. So you got to have a couple different plans in mind just in case.
Ronnie, we only have 1 minute left, but I want to ask you a question. I don't know, maybe you could ask often, but so you're 52 years old, you're riding better than ever. How long do you want to ride for?
Well, I wouldn't mind riding until I'm 60. The way I feel right now, you know, it's only 8 more years.
There you go.
So, I don't know. I feel good, I'm healthy, and I still want to do it. You know, because I took 5 years off out of my career, so I'm kind of still fresh, you know.
That's true. I didn't even think of that. That's a good point, Ronnie. That's a good point.
Yeah.
While you love it, just do what you love. Do what you love. And when you eventually retire, you know, 18 years down the road, whatever, what do you think you might do? Stay involved in the sport?
Yeah, I'll be involved in it somehow. You know, that's all I know. It's my life. I don't know. No, I might do like Paula and be an agent or something. Or I don't know. Might go to steward school or something. Who knows?
But, well, Ronnie, we are wishing you all the best, and hope you have a very, very long career ahead of you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Christina.
Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Tune in to the Horse Racing Radio Network tomorrow to hear the Big A on Express Bet Radio at 3 p.m., followed by Trainer Talk at 6 p.m. And be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.